half my head again. Hi, everybody. My name's Todd Beckus. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Kevin for asking me to do this. I've been really enjoying it. I've been really getting a lot out of it. It's forced me to go back and do some research and to kind of reflect and meditate on the past, how I've actually incorporated these steps. Before I go on, I you know what? These are my opinions. Just like anything else in AA, it's my opinion what I'm speaking of, and my experience. When they talk about step 10, you'll hear some read about it, hear some people talk about they don't think you should go back, and you should have to go back, do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 if you're working a step 10. You know, I'm not here to dispute anybody. I'm not here to cause any controversy. It's just my experience that I don't believe that. If it works for you, then by gosh, you keep on doing it. It's just in my experience. I go back. I've gone back many, many, many times because there's a lot of things that just kind of crop up. Now we're at past step 9. And what the big book tells me, it says I've entered the world of the spirit. But that doesn't mean I have a halo over my head or wings sprout on my back. By no means does it even imply anything like that. But what it does mean to me is that I have a God of my understanding in my life, and I rely on that God of my understanding to help me get through life on life's terms. I have some notes, and I'm going to probably do a little more reading than I have in the past. Just because I really think the big book does a wonderful job of illustrating and explaining how to work step 10. There's so much in it. I didn't want to write down everything in the big book and then critique everything, but it has some wonderful suggestions, and I actually use a lot of suggestions. But I know when I first looked at, when it came time for me to work step 10, it suggests that we continue to take a personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. The part that I got hung up on was continue. You know, what does that mean? What does that imply? Well, I looked it up. Continue means to persist in an activity or process. The word persist implies work. And what it says to me that I should take an inventory of myself throughout the day. I should look at myself throughout the day. And just like anything else, you know what? When I started out, when I first started looking at step 10, working step 10, is so much different than it is today. But the important thing is that I'm doing it. That's the important thing, I'm doing it. And I think if you look at yourselves, it's important that you do it. You don't have to do this perfect. There's nothing in these steps that say you have to do it perfect. And I think a lot of people get hung up on that. They try to do it perfect and it just isn't going to happen. And I can tell you from experience, it doesn't happen. I don't do it perfectly. There's some nights I go to bed without taking an inventory. And I wake up and it's like... But I continue. I want to be a better person. I think that's important. I want to be a better person. And by incorporating the steps in my life, one day at a time, I do become a better person. It doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes, because God knows I make a bunch of mistakes. But Alcoholics Anonymous provides me a way to amend these mistakes. But you know what? Step 10 is more than just about looking at the things, the mistakes that I made. You know what, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm sure you can relate to this as well, I do a lot of good. There's a lot of positive about me too that I want to continue to do. And I really think this inventory is about looking at those kind of things too. But I'm not going to touch too much on that tonight. I'm going to talk about the inventory as it relates to my character defects. Because I know that I try to work on them and try to lessen them. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And it gives me a little tip. This is from the big book. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. So, although I go back to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I do continually take an inventory of myself. And you know what? Working the first 9 steps, I developed with a conscience. I didn't have a conscience. I used to have a conscience prior to picking up booze, But somewhere in that those years of my drinking, I lost a I lost it. Or I stuffed it and shoved it down. But by incorporating the 12 steps in my life, working the first 9, I started to get a conscience. So some of the things that I was doing were bothering me. They were bothering me. And I think I mentioned it a little bit before, like things like sarcasm. You know, in interacting with people, and what started out to be fun and games ended up kind of trying to one-up one another. You know, I had to stop and sit and look at myself and say, what are you trying to do? And really what I'm trying, my pride and my ego. My pride and ego are two of the worst defects along with fear today. And they crop up in many different ways, many different times when I least expect it. And so, in those situations with friends, you know, you try to one-up. I remember insulting somebody. And I think I mentioned it before. I'm going to mention it again. My buddy Kevin. I would insult him when I saw him. I didn't say, it wasn't, hey, how you doing? It would some insult him. You know, and then he would see me and he would insult me back. And that went on for a little while. And it seemed like there was a wedge in between us. And that didn't feel good. That didn't feel good. So I took a little inventory, and what I had to do was change my approach with Kevin. And instead of insulting him, I'd say, how you doing? It's nice to see you. Those are the kind of things I started to do. And it took a little bit of time, but you know what? When we see each other, there's a big smile on our face. We hug each other. It's nice to see you. And that's a way of an inventory, looking at myself for something that was uncomfortable. The 12 and 12 has a few things that I particularly liked and I kind of applied to myself. 12 and 12 says it's a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something the matter with us. And that was a hard one for me to swallow, because I mean, some people, let's face it, some people, I don't know, for lack of a better word, really pissed me off. They go on, they talk about justifiable anger and this and that. But you know what? If they're doing that to me, there's something the matter with me. I can accept that today, but I'm not there with as far as not happening to me. I still get pissed off at people, maybe for not as long. And I think about when I drive, especially when I drive. I drive my wife insane. I really do, because it's not that I have road rage, but I have little comments for people.
Suggestions.
Yeah, suggestions. Kevin said suggestions. That's a nice way of putting it. And that's one of the things, I truly, truly am working on that. We're driving, and I really try not to verbalize what's going on. And sometimes I just can't help it, but I really try to be respectful of the people that are in the vehicle with me, and really not to get to that level where I got to be derogatory to the person in their car. It's a work in progress. And one of the things that the 12 and 12 talked about, and I really need to look at, and this goes way back even into today, is motives. What are my motives? I can disguise a lot of things that I do with a motive. I can disguise a lot of thing on the outside, looks really good, but behind it there's a real selfish personal motive. One of the things I was thinking of, and there were several things in the past, but one of the recent things, and I may even have mentioned this in the discussion, but there's a gentleman that I work with. And you know what? I like him. I keep him at arm's length, but I like him. And the thing with us two, we're both a lot alike, and so we kind of butt heads a lot. And I remember walking into our office one day, and I'm not going to go into detail, but we started going back and forth, and I'm saying something, he's coming back, and I'm going back, and we're going back and forth. It's getting kind of heated. It's really getting kind of heated. And you know when it gets heated and you walk out, and you come in and it's so thick you could cut it with a knife? That's uncomfortable. I don't like that. I don't like that. And what's step 10? Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Now there's a situation where we were both at fault. And so what I did, I'm not to pat myself on the back, it was what I'm supposed to do. I did go up and I said, Dave, you know what? I apologize. I got a little bit heated. I apologize for my part. And that's exactly what I said. And you know what the neat thing that was? He also apologized for his part. I mean, these are the kind of things that happen. It's just natural, and these are the kind of things I work on. I could have diffused that situation, but I like to be right. You could be happy you're right. Sometimes I like to be right, and I don't know how to shut my big mouth. My pride and my ego. And another one that I was thinking of, and I wrote down, it was constructively criticize someone who needed it when a real motive was to win a useless argument. And what I was thinking about, I mean, this goes back, and my wife's on Zoom, and I know she can relate. My daughter, you're going to hear a lot about my daughter because she really helped me to grow over the years, I'll tell you. We would go on vacations. And she is really headstrong, and she had her mom wrapped around her arm and around her little finger. And we would go on vacation. She'd just be a little shit. She really would sometimes. You think I could let it go and just kind of overlook it? No, because I'm a big shit. and I'm the man of the family. And what I say goes. That's kind of going through my head. But that wasn't always that happened. That didn't happen. And I would get pissed, and then she would. It would just be a real ugly scene. Really ugly, and I would end up apologizing once in a while, but not usually to her, because put bars full of arms. But what changed? I know I need to work on that, because we still, she's 24 now, we still take trips together. You know, I do, I adore her today. I love her to pieces. I really, truly do. 2019, we went to Indianapolis for Easter, Thanksgiving. And I decided, at that time, at that place, at our trip, I don't care. We're just going to enjoy it and let the day happen. And you know what? I went and picked her up, and my wife and I and her, we drove to Indianapolis. And we had a wonderful trip. I let it go. We'd come up the rest stop. How's your bladders, ladies? Yeah. You need to stop? We would stop. I didn't try to control anything. And it was amazing how wonderful that trip was on the way down and on the way back. And again, you could be right, you could be happy. You know, and the control, the defect of control, I want to be comfortable, and I'm trying to control the situation. When I let go of everything, I was very comfortable. What we're going to do with that extra time, so maybe it took us an extra 15, 20 minutes, maybe a half hour. What are you going to do with that extra time when you get there? You know, those are the kind of things that I've learned, those little gimmicks, those little tricks to kind of alleviate a lot of these defects. And again, the hardest part for me for this step is when I'm wrong to promptly admit it. I don't know about you, but I have a really hard time with that. And again, I'm going to set you up. I'm going to talk about my daughter, I'm going to talk about my wife, because this is where they really helped me to grow. When I was single for a long time. And Laura and I started to date back in 05. And with that, with Laura came this little bratty, snot-nosed kid with this relationship. And I'll start out, to say that she didn't like me is putting it kind of mildly. She really didn't particularly care for me. And I understand. You know, I can understand it today. But she didn't particularly care for me. And Laura and I, we dated. We dated for about 4 years, and then I had asked her to marry me, and her lease ran out, and it just became cost effective, and it seemed like she moved in with me. And she moved in. And when she moved in, along came this little girl. Oh my gosh. And what I have written down here is unfulfilled expectations. And when they moved in, I had this image in my head about what this family was going to be like. You know, grandiose, and you know, little house in a prairie, white picket fence, and we're going to live happily ever after. Boy, did I have a rude awakening coming. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It wasn't as bad as I'm making it out to be, but you know what? When I tried to control the situation, when I'm trying to make them do what I want me to do, when I'm trying to make them do what I want them to do, it just didn't go well. It didn't go well at all. There are many, many, many growing pains. That's putting it mildly. Many growing pains. they'd do something, I'd react negatively, and I'd have to apologize. So I was really apologizing a whole heck of a lot. One of my buddies from down Greenville area, his name was Eric. Him and I got to be really tight. And he went through a real similar situation. Him and his girlfriend, his wife, when he moved in, they had two small boys. She had two small boys. And it was really kind of funny that the things that I was going through are the exact same things he was going through. So that's what you taught me to do in AA. I'm taking this inventory and I'm just, you know, I can't change anything. And I'm talking to Eric. And what did he teach me to do? He taught me to look at it from her perspective, to put myself in her shoes, to be supportive. And I believe we talked about this before, be supportive. And you know what? That's the kind of things that I started to do. She was a cheerleader. I went to all her cheerleading events. Her plays, her graduations, everything. I went to everything I could. And it took time. I'm not saying it wasn't an overnight matter. These things that I'm talking about, they didn't happen overnight, ladies and gentlemen. They happened over a period of time. I'm taking the inventory of my, and I'm trying to be a better person. I'm trying to be supportive for my daughter. You know, she is my daughter. And I'm doing the things that I'm running by, and I'm really working on myself. I'm really trying not to make the same mistake. I failed miserably at times, but there are some times where I'm actually getting a lot better. And one of the things that he said to me that really hit me between the eyes, he said, "Todd, if you want to quit making amends, quit doing the things that require you to make amends." You know, go figure. Go figure. You know, and today my daughter and I have a wonderful relationship. We're very close. You know, I just adore her. I'm watching her grow up, and she's turned out to be a really beautiful woman. And it's really kind of neat, some of the gifts that have come back to me because of Alcoholics Anonymous and incorporating the steps in my life. I went down and I co-signed for a car for her. She was getting her own. I had to go sign off her car. And there's this application out on the thing, and it has my name, and it has relationship, it has father by there. It didn't say stepfather, it said father. I mean, I tell you what, it was all I could do to hold back the tears. It's little things like that, that by incorporating the 12 steps, particularly step 10, that enabled me to get to that point. It really meant the world. It really meant the world. She's not a touchy-feely kind of a person. But I tell you what, when she comes over, she'll pretend like she doesn't want to hug, or she's inching closer to me to free to give her a hug. That's the kind of the person she is. She loves it when I hug her. And before her and her boyfriend moved in together, who was the first person that she called if she had a problem, especially her car or whatever? I get a phone call. Little things like that. Those are the little things that tell me that, yeah, God is good and He's working in my life. And it was you people that I talked to and ran these things by, and I was able to incorporate the suggestions he made into my life. The big book, as I said, it does a really good job of outlining step 10. It talks about, I'm going to go back a little bit. I'm kind of out of order. It's also taught me to be open-minded and to listen to other people and listen for their suggestions, and not to mention Eric. But there was one time in particular, I was speaking at a meeting in Erie. And after the meeting, the guy came up and he talked to me, because I was in this horrific car accident back in 86. And he said something to me. He said, "Have you ever thought about seeing somebody about PTSD? I thought, PTSD? Isn't that, that's for soldiers. Soldiers have that kind of, people in the military have that kind of thing. But I thanked him, and I did. I investigated that. Now what I need to tell you, I need to back up a little bit. I was in this accident in March of 1986, and up to that point, that was back in 2019. Up to that point, there wasn't a day that didn't go by that I didn't think about that accident. It was just one of those things that was just a part of my life. It was part of my thought process. There wasn't a day that didn't go by I didn't think about that accident. And it was just as natural as I'm going to wake up and go have a cup of coffee. I wake up and I think about this accident. And so I sought out professional help. And we started to talk a little bit, and come to find out, I was suffering from PTSD for over 30 years, and I didn't know it. I didn't know it. So by listening to somebody and not thinking I know everything, taking some action, I can tell you today that I'm free of that. I hardly even think about it anymore. I still, when I lead, I stay green. It's in the rearview mirror, but I don't get up and think about that every day. What a gift that is. What a wonderful, wonderful gift that is. And with the big book, it talks about a nightly inventory. And I'm just going to read some of the things off. It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review the day. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, I do that. I truly do that. I laid in bed last night and I was thinking about, I'm experiencing a little bit of fear right now. It's kind of uncalled for, but I have such a high expectation of myself and this job that I'm working on at work. And what is it? I'm afraid of failing. Yeah, I owned it. I owned it. I asked God for help. I'm not sitting here and tell you today that I'm free of that fear, because I'm not. But you know what I'm doing? What I can do? I'm doing everything I can possibly do to help take care of this problem, to be a success at this project I'm working on. It's not butterflies. It's a pretty tough job, but I asked for help, and I own the fear that I'm feeling, and I truly believe that one day at a time we're going to get through this. It's going to be okay. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? You know, there are times I answer that question, and I'm not always happy with the way I answer it. Sometimes I look especially to selfishness. I really still think that it's part of my makeup. It's part of me. I see selfishness, especially when I got married. I didn't realize how selfish I was, and I could still see it today. It's something that I work on, and I'm getting better with it a day at a time, but I still have room for improvement. Do I owe an apology? Again, I don't like to go to bed owing somebody an apology. There's been many times where, you know, the next day I will get a hold of whoever I think owe an apology to and follow through with it. That doesn't happen as often as it used to. Usually I'm pretty good. If I feel I owe an apology, I'm usually pretty good at making it right away. And typically, most of the time, it's usually with my wife. It's usually with my wife because she's the closest to me. We're so comfortable with each other, and we're so... We don't have a filter at times, unfortunately. But as we are growing together in our marriage and in sobriety, and as we incorporate these steps, that gets a whole heck of a lot better. I don't have to apologize near as much as I used to. Were we kind and loving toward all? Again, I work on that. I truly work on that. There are times where I like to feel superior, and I'll start making fun of somebody because of the way they are. I'm uncomfortable when I do that, and I know it doesn't feel good inside, and so I usually quit, usually. What could we have done better? Yeah. There's always room for improvement in me. I always have room for improvement. I'm a human being. I'm expected to fail. I really, truly think I'm expected to fail at times. I'm not going to do everything perfect. I have such a high expectation of myself that when I don't achieve what I think I should achieve, I beat myself up. Nobody can beat me up better than I can beat me up. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Sometimes I do that, but usually I'm pretty good at not thinking only of myself. Usually. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others or what we could pack into the stream of life? I try to think of other people. And put their needs before mine, but yeah, sometimes I like to think about me. And there's also, if you read the big book, and this is, I have it in capital letters. After answering all those questions, it says, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective action should be taken, what corrective measures should be taken. So that gives me a little tip. I'm going to make mistakes. When I lay down at night, I'm probably not going to be able to answer to satisfaction all those questions as I would like to. You know, I go to bed and there's always something that I can look at. I know that I could do better at, but I don't beat myself up. Tomorrow's another day. If I wake up, if God gives me another day to wake up, it's another day to try to do better, to try to be a better person, to try to incorporate His will into my life and to carry it out, to try to think of somebody else, to try to make an AA contact, to try to help a sick and suffering alcoholic. There's always that opportunity. And also, as I said earlier, it's a poor day indeed when we haven't done something right. You know what, ladies and gentlemen, I know I have a lot of defects. There's no doubt about that. And I make a lot of mistakes, but there is a lot of things I do right. And I'm not going to sit here and pat myself on the back and name them all. That's not what this is about. I know what they are. I know there's a lot of things I do right, and I want to continue to do those things. I want to continue to be a better person. I want to continue to carry this message of recovery to the sick and suffering alcoholic. I want to be a power of example. I want somebody to look at me and to have what I want. I want what I have. I truly mean that. Because what I have today is so much better than when I walked in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, a broken apart, beaten down man into a man relatively happy, brimming with confidence today. I want somebody to see what Alcoholics Anonymous can do for somebody that came in that condition. I want to be a power of example today. So that's why I continue to try to be a better person. And again, if I'm working this step, there are some things I can expect to receive. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. And I can honestly say that is so true in my life. I don't put myself in situations where I'm around liquor a whole heck of a lot. That's not a part of me anymore. But my wife and I and friends, we do go out for dinner once in a while, and the places that we go serve liquor. Occasionally, I'll go to a function where there is alcohol. Not too often, but occasionally. My parents' house. Some sort of a party, an anniversary, or whatever. Sometimes places I go, they do have liquor. But you know what? It doesn't bother me today. It certainly doesn't bother me. And I'll tell you this. Some of the trials and tribulations, some of the life's and life's terms I've been through, the beautiful gift of that whole thing, as difficult as it was, is alcohol didn't even come to my mind. The thought of drinking didn't even come to my mind. And that's the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm forever grateful for that. We react sanely and normally. We find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. And that is so true. This the compulsion to drink, the thought of alcohol, was expelled. And I truly believe because of working the steps. I truly believe that. Because I truly continue to work and try to live the steps, it still stays expelled. I believe that I can expect that if I continue to do the things that I've been doing. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in the position of neutrality, safe and protected. You know, God of my understanding, my God, I really truly believe, because I have Him in my life today, and it keeps me safe from alcohol. And again, I don't put myself in precarious situations where I'm going to be tempted. You say, you go to the bar, you go to the barber shop, you're going to get a haircut sometime. I don't do those sort of things. I don't belong there. But I feel that I've been placed in a position of neutrality. It doesn't exist. The problem doesn't exist. What a beautiful feeling that is. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. What a beautiful feeling that is. But also, it comes with a warning. The big book says, right around step 10, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance. People forget that. I hear many times people say contingent on our spiritual condition. No. contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And maintenance implies work. I can't stay sober on yesterday's meetings. I can't stay sober and work in yesterday's steps. And that's why step 10 is so darn important to me, because it gives me a way to gauge myself. What do I need to work on? What do I need to improve? What are my assets? What are my liabilities? And that's why I love step 10 and why it's so important to me. And just a little bit of little insight, a little how I look at and how I try to work step 10. And you know what? That's all I have right now. So thank you for listening. God bless you all.
Thank you, Todd. So now we'd like to open things up for questions and answers. So anybody here in the room that has a question for Todd, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get you the microphone. And if you're on Zoom, feel free to just speak up whenever you get the opportunity.
Hey, Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
Thanks, Todd. At the very beginning of your talk tonight, you had said that, you know, there's some, you'll hear some people in Alcoholics Anonymous say that if you've worked the steps, when you're working step 10, there's no need to go back and work 4 and 5. And but they, you didn't really agree with that. And but does that, is it safe to assume that every time something comes up in your step 10 inventory, that every single thing, you don't need to go back and do a fourth and a fifth and or, you know, all the way through on every single thing that's something that might pop up?
Yeah. Again, I'm not here to cause controversy. If people, if you read the steps we took, the author talks about step 10 incorporating 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 all in one. And yeah, I could see his point. I could see his point. It's just my belief that I don't always take a good personal inventory, and a lot of times I'll let things build up. And it's been my experience that when I did my first 4 step, I was about a little over a year sober. Okay? And then I did my 5th step soon after that and continued on. There were a lot of things from my past that I didn't even know about when I first got sober. So as I became older in sobriety, what I found, my experience was, I had to go back because there were people that were renting space in my head, resentments and fears that I didn't even know about when I first got sober. And today, I'll give you a good example of fear. I remember, I was like 25 years sober. Work was really, it was really bad. They laid off half the shop. And I was so fearful I was going to lose my job that I became sick. I couldn't eat. I lost about 30 pounds. I was so full of fear, and I had to do a fourth and a fifth step on that. Okay? Jump ahead, 2020. Things got real bad. They walked me out. So my greatest fear was realized. I had to go back and do a fourth and a fifth and a sixth and look at my part. Why was I afraid? What were the things I was really afraid of? What were the things? And even like being able to look at it today, I recognize a little bit sooner. Today I'm able to look at things a little bit quicker, and maybe I can take care of that stuff in a tenth step. I don't need to write out an inventory. I personally believe an inventory needs to be written. That's just my opinion. And you know, I'm not here to speak for AA. That's for me. That's, I have to write an inventory. When I do a step 10, it's more of a reflection and asking God's guidance to help me do better. Hopefully that clarified.
No, that's perfect. And I was gonna share an experience, but you know what? I'll do that in 21 years from now or in private. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
Who else has a question for Todd? Couple hands here.
Freddie Buongiorno, alcoholic.
Hi, Freddie.
Todd's smiling at me right now because I just did my fifth step with him, my second one. And I was one of those fellows that thought that you don't have to go back, because if you did it right the first time when you were 1 year sober, then you don't. And I did a thorough one 20 years ago. I did a very thorough fourth and fifth. But things got, you know, life became life, and it was suggested by somebody, him, you know, that I should probably do a fourth and a fifth step on this stuff, and then actually we're still continuing to work. But I guess I don't really have a question. I just want to say, it was neat looking at him, because I did it with him, and as I'm admitting to God, to myself, and that other human being, him, it was neat having him. It bounced off him, and he came back. You know, I mean, I'm sick. I was sick, and I still am sick. But I was in a bad place, and so I bounced it off him, and it came back from a person that wasn't as sick as I was at the time. You know, so he was. Explaining different character defects, I would think it would be one character defect, and he would say, maybe it, and I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, you know. So I don't know, I mean, that's not really a question, I guess, but I felt the need to share that experience that I had a week ago. So thanks, I love you guys.
Thanks, Freddie.
We'll review the format with you after the meeting.
Yes, I don't want to.
Okay. Hi, Leslie, alcoholic.
Hi, Leslie.
I have an actual question for you. So, anyway, I have heard people talking lately in the past, maybe couple of months, over Zoom time. So people who attend meetings outside the immediate area, talking about sharing their 10th step, like daily or routinely, like among, you know, their sponsor, the people they sponsor, you know, the sponsee, and as a matter of practice to kind of take that God, ourselves, and another human being thing into the 10th step. I'd never heard of it. I was wondering if you had ever heard of it, or if you've ever practiced anything like that, or kind of just what do you think? You know, is that just, I don't know, but it was new to me, so I'm asking, is it something you had heard of or had ever done?
You know what, I've not heard of that. I've not heard of the actual sharing with... Now, it wouldn't be uncommon to bounce something off of my sponsor. Somebody hits me with something I'm not sure of, I'll bounce off my sponsor. It's not uncommon for my wife and I to talk either. Bouncing some things off her. This is how I feel. What do you think? Yeah, and she offers a lot of good feedback, but as far as with a group of people like that, I don't really have a lot of experience, or have I heard that either. So, no.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
I'm not an alcoholic.
How you doing?
Honestly, Leslie stole my question. So, I was going to ask you about that. I'm not saying on a daily basis sharing a step 10 with anything, but anyhow, my situation was this. I had something that was bothering me. I was talking to my sponsor, and he said, "Well, have you been inventorying it? Been doing an inventory?" And he said, "About, you got to change the things you're doing if you want to quit making amends." And so I was having the same results day after day. And I said, "I've been inventorying it." And he said, "Well, so have you actually like put pen to paper inventorying it? And not necessarily going back and doing a fourth, fifth, and a sixth, and all that, but..." You know, where exactly what it says in the book. Where was I resentful or fearful or angry or all those things? And so I guess that was my question. Leslie kind of took, but I wanted to take the opportunity to say thank you. That's all.
Thanks, Ed.
Who else has a question for Todd? Anybody on Zoom? Any more questions?
Oh,
Kevin.
Kevin's not going to let me get away.
It's nice to get that kind of response, you know, like, oh, God.
Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome, everybody. So anyway, just to go back and revisit what Leslie and Ed were talking about, I wasn't quite clear on what was said as far as, is it a sharing with another person or a group, or what? I didn't understand. Yeah.
What I had come to learn about is a little small circles of people, like a sponsor and a couple of your sponsees, would kind of share their inventory daily, not deep dark, but the daily stuff on a routine basis. And it was viewed, what I'm told is it was viewed as a method of accountability and helping to keep on this with the 10th step. And that was new to me, and that I'm so sorry I didn't describe it well enough to give you an opportunity.
Well, I understood.
I understand a lot of things, but I don't comprehend very much. Anyway, well, thanks for clarifying that. I guess, I got sober in California, and a group of people that I got sober with, we did that.
Okay.
We did do that. There was a group of us that got sober about the same amount of time, and after we went through the steps, and we were, I was told that I had to do a written inventory until I really didn't need to do it. And you described that perfectly in some of your previous steps, is you do it until you get it down, and then you know. And then if it comes up more and more, but I have been a part of a group. I guess it was an inventory. But what it did was it gave you, there was probably a half a dozen of us who were sponsored by, it was a men and a women's group. It was three and a male sponsor and a female sponsor. And sometimes when you get a different perspective from the opposite sex or a different gender, it makes a little bit, you get a different perspective.
Sure.
I don't think that anybody shared anything that was inappropriate, and if it was more male or female related, I think it was handled like it normally is. But yes, there was several groups, and I actually was a part of it, and then a group of men that I sponsored in California, we did that because the advantage of it was is that you get more than one perspective and stuff like that. So,
sure.
But thanks again, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for everybody for helping me understand what's going on.
Thanks, Kevin.
Anybody on Zoom?
Anyone on Zoom? Okay. All right. Thank you, Todd.